Hey everybody, welcome to Comedy on Vinyl. This week we have Jonah Ray and It Is Awesome. I wanted to very quickly thank everybody for donating to my documentary Lords of Soaptown. We just finished principal photography this last weekend. I flew out to Chicago, got 9 hours of amazing footage, and the project has changed considerably actually, but that makes it an amazing, amazing project. I'm just very excited about it. Also, Comedy on Vinyl Live is coming again Monday, May 28th at 7:30 p.m. It's Memorial Day. It's at IO West, Improv Olympic West here in Los Angeles on Hollywood Boulevard. Our guests are going to be David Anthony Higgins and a Comedy on Vinyl regular, Jeremy Guskin. Tickets are only $5, 2-for-1. Tickets are available if you show the event invite on your phone or a printout. There are drink specials, so please come on out and enjoy that. And thank you so much. And don't forget to rate us highly on iTunes and write a review, because that really helps us out. Thanks so much.
Ooh, this is in really good condition. It's not bad for $3, dude. Oh, God, there's so many good shops around here.
Which one?
That one is at Record Surplus, which is right next to my work.
On Pico, right?
Now it's on Santa Monica.
Okay.
I didn't know they were ever anywhere else, but one of my co-workers said she'd been going to the other one for years. But, yeah, they just moved it, I guess, a couple months ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I used to, because I used to work at a record store in Venice Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I would always end up passing it.
Yeah.
You know?
They have everything. They're fucking everything.
Yeah, they have everything.
A gigantic comedy collection, too, which you never find. Ever. No, I need to take you there. You'd love it, actually. Because, like, on average, they're a little more expensive than, like, Atomic down the street, but they're also in better shape.
Well, yeah, because... And they're probably not, like, in boxes that are just surrounding you, so you have this much room.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There's no room in it.
Yeah, there's a new record store on Glendale near our place in Atwater Village, mm-hmm. and it's like one guy that runs it, and... It's just, if there's more than, like, four people looking through records in there, you can't
right.
move. You can't, like, go down any of the aisles. Just because it's a tiny place,
and yeah.
he's clearly trying to, like, you know, now he has, like, vintage shirts in the back,
because
you can't, it's impossible to have a record store.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's pretty neat.
Sweet.
I ended up getting the Back to the Beach soundtrack on vinyl.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Which has, you know, Pee-wee Herman on it, has Dick Dale on it.
That's awesome.
Fishbone.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And Return of Living Dead soundtrack, picture disc.
That's
really? Yeah.
And that's a good soundtrack, too. Oh. It's got a lot of old punk bands and stuff.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good God. All right, I guess we'll get started. Not to kick you out. I love you very much, though.
That's right.
I mean, you can join in. You heard the album. You can feel free to join in.
That's true.
You just don't notice well as Jonah does, neither.
But if I come up with something brilliant,
you can just walk in.
I'll just be like some random
You're allowed to have a
somebody's voice.
Yeah, that's how it usually is, though.
That's you all podcasting is.
Yeah, that's true. Alright, sweet. So I guess I'll say officially, we started recording about 5 minutes ago, but that's okay.
We had some good conversations, though.
It was really amazing.
There's no real reason to cut those out.
No, not at all, whatsoever. So everybody, welcome to Comedy on Vinyl, which you know because you downloaded it. This is Jason Klom, and with me this week is Jonah Ray.
Klom is how it's pronounced.
It is how it's pronounced.
Alright,
most people assume Klam.
Yeah, I guess...
It looks like Klam.
It does, but maybe it's the two M's that make you think that it should be something different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like a soft A.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there some kind of rule like that if there's two?
Usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be fair, it is the root, I think, of the word clammy, because it does mean damp in German.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, really exciting.
Yeah. You mm-hmm. do look German.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This week we're talking about E equals MO squared, which is a brilliant Emo Phillips album.
Yeah.
And why did you pick it? Let's start there.
It was, I think it was the first concerted effort to find a comedy record.
Because mm-hmm.
You didn't see it as much, I think, in stores. You would always see yeah. Richard Pryor records,
sure.
Don Rickles' Hello Dummy. These are all like standard comedy vinyls you see. You know, Disco Duck by Ortiz.
Yes.
I started, you know, Emo Phillips to me growing up was just the weirdo guy from UHF.
Yeah.
The guy, the shop teacher.
Sure.
And then I was watching something on Comedy Central. It might have even been like a short attention span theater, or it was just a clip, you know, when they used to have all those stand up clip shows.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's that guy from UHF.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is really weird.
Yeah.
And then someone like, you know, told me he had an album out, so you know it wasn't on CD at the time.
Okay.
And I don't think it made it to CD, you know, recently, I believe, but so I went out looking for
yeah.
it on vinyl, and it was the first time I'd ever been like, I'm going to go and look for. And in Hawaii, that's usually a fruitless, affair. It's there's a few record stores you can check, and then that's it.
Yeah,
there's not going to be any guy wandering through that's going to sell it to anybody.
Yeah.
And I found it at Jelly's bookstore in Kaimuki. It became like the first one that, and I would get these other comedy records, but I wouldn't sit down with them, like I wouldn't like sit down and listen to them like I did this or like I would with other stuff. I had them because I liked comedy.
Sure.
And just everything about it, like I just loved it. It was so weird, and I didn't know that was already happening in comedy, that like this weird stuff. And how, like, it's just consistent jokes throughout.
Right.
So that's how I kind of got into... That's why I still have it.
Sure.
I don't have too many of my other stuff. Because, like, you start moving around a lot, you got to pare down everything.
Of course.
And it's the one I kind of, held on to.
Yeah. Obviously, I've heard your stand-up at this point, so it hasn't maybe directly influenced your style, but, as far as his influence is, on you?
My really early stuff, like, when I started, lots of misdirects, lots of, tangents. Mm-hmm. I tried to do tangents and stuff, I was never, when I started, I wasn't nearly comfortable enough being a character.
Right.
And I was never, but I loved, I loved jokes. And I love the fake stories and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I believe any kind of, music or comedy can influence you, but maybe it's because it's so far from anything I could ever pull off.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And those are some of my favorite comics to watch. Brent Weinbach, I see it. I'm like, oh my God, he's one of my favorite comedians to watch. It's because I could never do any of that stuff. I couldn't act that way. I couldn't talk that way. I couldn't, make jokes that way because my brain doesn't go there.
Sure.
And sometimes, you should be happy about that. That you're not the kind of guy that can think of that stuff. And I think that's why I've kind of always had a fascination with, character comics.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like so much about Zach is he's almost kind of a character.
Yeah.
And Rory Scovel is a type of character.
Right.
It's just emo. It was everything that I couldn't do, and that's why I think why I liked it so much.
Yeah. I mean, characters seemed a little more. Well, maybe they weren't more extreme in the '80s. Maybe they were just '80s, but.
You think of Bobcat Goldthwait, that was a straight up Judy Tenuta.
Yep.
Who else was around that time just big characters, big personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Howie Mandel was just cocaine, the character.
Yep.
And just even now out of stand up, you think about just the comedic performers, Paul Rubens, Pee-wee Herman.
Sure. Like,
even when he wasn't being Pee-wee Herman, he was still this pretty much the same kind of snarky, kid character. And I think that was just of the time.
Did you make friends as a kid over comedy records or over comedy in general?
I don't think I ever made any friends with comedy. It was always, it was more music growing up for me. It was, you're into these punk bands too. You're into these, this kind of music. But me and my friend Donald, who got into like punk and hardcore and all that stuff together, we, kind of found comedy, the comedy we liked, and it's always kind of hard to say who got who into what what was the thing that influenced it, but it was, we were interested in seeing the same movies and watching the same shows, and I remember just, I started picking up more of it, I started obsessing more over, as he started getting into crazier and crazier music, I started focusing more on comedy and stand-up and stuff like that, I don't think I ever made a friend through a similar style of comedy or enjoyment of comedy until, you know what, no, there was this one guy, Aaron Deloach, who, I can't believe I forgot to mention it, but like, he wasn't part of my normal group of friends.
Okay.
He was just a guy that we, when you're just hanging around and you're like, that guy kind of, that's a really funny guy.
Sure.
We didn't really have much in common. Mm-hmm. I was straight edge. He drank and did drugs and smoked,
Yeah.
And he was, you know, he was not popular, but, like, you know, more, he was more accepted than me in high school. But, you know, Mr. Show, we would talk about Mr. Show all the time. And this was when you were still trying to find out when it was going to even be on.
Right, you know?
It's like, okay, it was on Friday at midnight, so this Friday let's watch it, and it's not on, you know.
Yeah.
Such was the problem, you know. And you can't look online.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know what, that's funny. Yeah, he is the guy that, and we really had plans on moving out here together to do comedy. But his you know, home life, like, you know, it's like, he didn't, like, the mom was, like, died when he was a kid.
Wow.
And he had, you know, five brothers and sisters about.
Fuck.
All of them with names starting with A. Aaron, Ashley, Akira, like, it was just a whole bunch of A. And, the, like, the dad's this, like, alcoholic crotchety teacher from the community college.
Fun.
Yeah, and, like, it's just, this guy's life was the fucking worst.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, he was just like, we would just talk about comedy, then we talked about coming out here.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you have a life where you almost kind of have to help out your family.
Yeah.
You can't.
Sure.
And I really do, he is one of the funniest guys that I think we'll never, no one will ever know.
Right, right.
Yeah. And, yeah, we kept up pretty nicely with it, so.
Probably the toughest time in anyone's life is when you have to murder a loved one because they're the devil. Other than that, though, it's been a good day.
A guy like that seems clear why comedy would be an escape. Was there anything specifically, though, for you? Or was comedy an escape for you, or is it just discovering a new way of expression, or was it... I mean, I know it's a million different things to a million different people, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, I was really fat growing up. I was in Hawaii. I'm very white and pale.
Right.
And there was a lot going against me.
Sure.
And the fact that I'm like, and I'm also tall, you know, just a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a lot of people telling you to play sports because you're big, you know, when you're a kid, you're reactionary.
Yeah.
If you have a subversive mind at all, you know,
sure.
You're like, when you have a bunch of people telling you what to do, you go, no, no.
Of course.
You know,
of course.
And so everyone was telling me, play football, play basketball. You know, you're big, you're tall, like, do this stuff. And it made me just, like, no, but, like, and then it would cause a lot of problems with coaches and other players, you know. And I didn't really surf.
Uh-huh.
And that's, like, that's weird to people.
Sure.
And I didn't drink and I didn't smoke pot, which everybody does
in
Hawaii. And so, like, but I was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so... You know, I remember just, you know, I was the guy that joked around about not being able to get girls. I was the guy that joked around about being fat. And you know, as far as it's the atypical, you know, cliche, just like oh, I use it as a defense mechanism. And I did, but, like, it's just because I just enjoyed it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it made me happy. Like, I loved watching, like, you know, old, like, Mel Brooks. Like, my dad's the one that showed me Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. And, like, I remember it was crazy because it was, like, a movie he wanted to watch with me.
Yeah.
And it had so much swearing in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? So that was crazy to me. Like, it's like, oh, if it's funny, swearing's allowed.
Yeah.
And my dad will still, if it's like, he'll say offensive things or he'll, like, you know, he'll still be fine with swearing if it's done in the context of humor.
That's good. That's a good way to be. Be raised on that. I wonder, was there one comedian that made you want to be a stand-up or be a comic, or was it just a lot of influences?
You know what? It was weird, because I didn't, you know, I used to try, I'd be in my room, and I'd try to do stand-up, and I was a huge Norm Macdonald fan.
Uh-huh.
Like, I love Norm Macdonald, which I think Norm has some emo influences,
for sure.
Just with the you know, the weird fake stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the turns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be him a lot, and but I also just, you know, I loved Chris Farley, and I wanted to, and I was a big guy, so, you know, and I wanted to just do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't care how.
Sure.
I just knew that, and that's the greatest part about comedy, mm-hmm. is that, you know, the expanse yeah. of what you can be involved in.
Absolutely.
I know guys that are really into comedy, but they're editors, and they love being comedy editors.
Yeah.
They love knowing how to cut to
oh,
the
God,
beat,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Camera guys, like, they know where to, and those guys end up going on, like, a lot of those shows, like The Office and
sure.
Parks and Rec, because they know where to find it. They know when to push in.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are in comedy.
Yeah.
And they're cameramen and, you know, writers and comics and improv. And
sure.
that's what's great. These are so many things.
Right.
And that's what I really liked about it. It was just this whole huge expanse of stuff. And so, for me, it was, like, you know, making funny videos.
Sure.
Like, doing sketches, doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no real one thing that influenced me.
Okay.
And the fact that it was, you know, Mr. Show, you're watching Mr. Show and you're seeing, like, this, you know, David Cross doing sketches,
mm.
but then you go and you watch his HBO special, and you're like, oh, this guy's doing it, too.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's just a comedian.
Sure, sure.
And I think that's what's great about it.
How do you think somebody gets away with 45 minutes of telling a bunch of fake stories in a weird, goofy voice? What is it about it? You know what I mean? Like, how the fuck do you do that? I was listening to
well,
it again
funny
today.
Voice.
Sure.
Funny voice, I think, is what brought people in,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then I think what kept a lot of the... I think it was weird. I think people... A lot of people in the beginning of Emo's career was based off of just like, oh, what a goofy, weird guy.
Yeah.
But it's if you pay attention... It's some of the smartest, quickest jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Just the, you know, the whole, like the breakdown of the religion.
Yes.
Like, all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down. Just, and even though it's just funny, the way it turns out, the way it die, heretic, you know.
Yeah.
Just the fact that, like, it just, the whole bit, yeah, it shows how ridiculous, like, you know, a conversation could go.
Yeah.
But just the idea that, like, it's like, oh, yeah, this is also really silly.
Yeah.
All these different factions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all, like, the ways that people can relate to each other and the ways they'll find a difference to not enjoy.
Sure, yeah.
And it's, and, you know, just, like, it's just, he did a FYF Fest last
mm-hmm.
year, which is a, you know, like a rock festival. It's
uh-huh.
been going on for a while. I've been helping putting the comedy together for it
awesome.
Since it started about 7-8 years ago. And I, like, we had a couple extra bucks, and I was
uh-huh.
like, let's go to Emo.
Yeah.
And a guy I know, one of my really favorite local comics right now is
mm-hmm.
Jim Hamilton.
Okay.
Who has a lot of influence, like, through Emo. But, like, Emo saw him do stand-up, liked him, so now we have this in to Emo
awesome.
Phillips, where Jim asked Emo, and
mm-hmm.
it was, like, a whole back and forth, but he did it to this jaded daytime rock festival crowd and destroyed
oh.
with the most, like, it was crazy. And he's still doing the carry, like, you know, just
yeah.
real, like, weird and uncomfortable and just, like, killing it with jokes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
and
amazing.
So it keeps the intellectuals in, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
It's, you can enjoy it on a surface goofy level, just a weirdo.
Sure.
I mean, he's, like, he's got the belt over the belt loops.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing a children's you know, baseball shirt with football, you know, helmets on it.
Yeah.
He's got the dumb hair. He's got the, you know, just, it's silly, but
yeah.
that will bring people's attention to you. And then all of a sudden they don't realize that they're kind of being told that, you know, religion might not be the most honest thing. And,
yeah.
you know,
right.
Yeah. It's just really, really awesome.
So was there a Jonah meets Emo moment then, or did you really get to meet him?
I got to meet him. There's two comics, old school comics, Craig Anton and Ron Lynch.
Okay.
And they used to have a show. Ron Lynch does a show called the Tomorrow Show Saturday nights at midnight at the Steve Allen Theater.
Okay.
And but the at the Steve Allen Theater years and years and years ago, they Craig Anton and Ron Lynch had a show called The Idiots. It was
uh-huh.
a play. And it was just these two scientists. They were the sons of the guys that found the DNA,
okay.
you know, strand. And so it's just, but they're just complete idiots,
mm-hmm.
and they hate each other. But they're just, you know, the only way they can get some money for a grant is to, and it's just a really ridiculous, very goofy, very Marx Brothers kind of play. But there's another layer to it where there's a very incompetent stage crew.
Uh huh.
And so it'd be me, this guy Neil Mahoney, the guy who directed the Freak Dance movie,
mm-hmm.
And Amit, the guy who, like, ran the theater.
Okay.
And so during, you know, set changes and stuff like that, there was this other play going on. So the lights would be out, and we'd be doing these loud, hushed whispers, and, like, you know, like, we're arguing with each other, we don't know what to do, and then it's like, and so then the next act break, we run out and we're changing stuff around and we're getting into a fight and we're pushing each other. Eventually, that leads to a gun going off and one of us dying.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and it was like, and every week there was also like a really nasty. Every week we do it, there was a neighbor or a landlord,
uh-huh.
And so John Ennis from Mr. Show was the landlord. One of Sarah Silverman. Mm-hmm. Was a, and that was like, this was a thing where I'm kind of getting to meet people on a, like, it's like, oh, we're in this too.
Yeah.
You know? And I've been doing shows for a couple of years, but it was just still really neat. I remember, like, that was like the first time Sarah had ever, like, been like, oh, I really like this joke of yours.
Awesome.
I was like, whoa.
Awesome.
And then so they got Emo to come in, and I was like, just in the back, and he's in there, and he's like, hello, how are you? You know, and I was like, oh, I'm good. I told him, I was like, you know, one of the first records I really sought out was Eagles MO Square. I'm a huge fan. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, do you still have it? And I was like, yeah, I still have it. And he's like, well, now you have it on CD too. And he pulled it out, and he had just pressed it, that and the Hasty Pudding album, yeah. Like, and he, like, on a CD, he's like, now you have this.
Oh,
yeah, and I was just like, yeah, right, cool. You know,
yeah.
And that's the thing about doing, like, comedy is the... You know, it's the kind of thing that people like about baseball.
Yeah.
Is that there's this long history where you can follow back these stats and these teams and these, you know, locations.
Right.
All the way back to the 1800s.
Sure.
And there's always, like, little layovers. It's like, well, this guy on his last, you know, on Babe Ruth's last year of playing,
uh-huh.
This guy started, and that guy became a legend. And then this, like, the last couple of years, is, and you can think, you can put that onto comedy as well.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, like, just the... The purest case, I guess, would be SNL, you know, like at the last years of Farley and Spade, you know, like Will Ferrell started and Dan, and, you know, and Daryl Hammond. And that's the thing about comedy that's so neat is that you can, there's these, you know, I'm young, I have nothing to do with Emo Phillips, but I'm young and I'm you know, kind of around the same time as, you know, these other guys.
Sure.
Like the Mr. Show guys. Right. So we're still doing stuff, but we're doing stuff before me. And
right.
then, and then because of that, you know, I get to do this thing with Ron Lynch and Craig Anton, who are old New York and Boston guys.
Right.
Like Ron Lynch was back in the day when, you know, Boston was blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and because of that extra branch out now, mm-hmm. there's Emo Phillips. And you can see the links between it. And that's what's really cool about it, you know. And it's really hype. You know, it's like it makes it seem more epic than it is. But it's for guys like us. It's,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, and it's like, it's just, and you want to be cool, and you want to just be like, yeah, it's just, we're all doing this.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a weird thing when you're, you know, acting or doing a stand-up or doing, you know, something
mm-hmm.
with a guy that you grew up watching.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't fucking imagine that.
It's just that it never ceases to amaze me, but you can't let it, you know, affect you.
Right. Not too much.
The other night, my dad took me aside. Said, Emo, I want you to promise to take care of your mother after I'm gone. I said, Dad, don't talk like that. I don't want to have to take care of her. You know who I hate more than anyone else? Indian givers. No, I take that back. You know who I hate more than anyone else? People that imitate owls. But you didn't know. Don't feel bad.
Yeah,
a little, right?
Yeah. Somewhat. It's here and there, and you know.
If you don't appreciate it, I think.
Yeah, and you have to be able to appreciate it because it's a game that everybody can play.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, there's no separation, you know?
Because mm-hmm.
it's like, you know, we. At the show, me and Kamel do the Meltdown show. Mm-hmm. Robin Williams came by.
Oh, fuck.
And Robin Williams came by and did a 7-minute set.
Holy
we
shit.
Asked him to. He's like, oh, I just want to look at the room. So it looks like a fun show. It looks really. And we're, come on, just go and do 7 minutes. He's like, okay. So now we're just in the back room of a comic book store at a show we've been doing for mm-hmm. a while.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin Williams is there. And we're like, hey, Robin, first name, Robin. Why'd you get up there? You know, and then he goes up and he kills, and he's like, and we're just all hanging out, and we're all talking comedy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, you're talking to this guy that, you know, now you're talking Ron Williams because you're on a show together.
Yeah.
And you're just chatting, and then he'll go, oh, you know, one time me and Jonathan Winters were, and then you, and all of a sudden now he's telling a story about Jonathan Winters.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And then like he could, and then he's like, and Jonathan Winters was telling me a story about, you know, and it could just could easily like a bolt of lightning just go all over the place and real far back. It's just
good
neat.
God, yeah. Yeah. No, I wouldn't be able to stop from crying and shitting at the same time.
Yeah, though, exactly. It was just all everything. Plack. Yeah.
Oh my God. Do you miss at all having a physical album? I mean, obviously you buy them still, so that's cool. But like, do you miss about any comics or any comedy like actually having the physical, or music too, having a physical album?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, for music nowadays, I use this Spotify type program called Ardio, RDIO.com, I love it. I love it because it's like, you know, I'm giving money to this music. I'm still like somewhat supporting it, but I'm able to just kind of keep up with everything.
Sure.
It sucks because I don't soak in things as much as I used to.
Uh huh.
You know, the whole idea of riding your bike to the record store to pick up a comedy album, like, you know, like picking up an Adam Sandler album or anything like that, and just going home and sitting down and listening to it.
Yeah.
And I do miss that because I don't soak in music as the same, you know. Music's now a thing I'm listening to while working.
Right.
Or
right.
driving, you know. Right. Well, it's like, you know, I listen to music when I'm working, I'm listening to podcasts when I'm driving.
Yeah.
And I miss it. Like, it's, and I think there's there is a bit of a, you know, people are starting to want to put out stuff again.
Sure.
It's nice to have it, you know? And for performers, it's something to sell on the road. It's something to sign.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Bronger put his record out on vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
A special thing, and Stand Up Records just put out Kyle Kinane's Death of the Party on vinyl.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's gorgeous.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's, it sucks that it doesn't happen as often.
Sure.
But if it helps get new stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you don't have to pay that much more money for, you know, a physical thing.
Right.
It's, but I like, you know, I like records. I, you know, the putting out, like I put out a 7-inch record years ago, and that was just because it was like me and the guy from AST Records. I was like, oh, I always thought it'd be so, because I was in punk bands. And I was like, that's like, I want to put out a record.
Sure.
Because that's what you would try to do.
Well, of course.
You know, you want to put out 7-inch. And you'd send it to Maximum Rock and Roll, and they shit on over, all over, because they don't think it's punk enough. You know, it's just, oh, but we got our names in there, and they have a picture of the record.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I was like, you know, when I started stand up, I want to put out a stand up. Like, eventually I want to put out a stand up 7-inch.
Yeah.
He's like, let's do it.
Awesome.
And then the whole plan was, you know, oh, let's do another 7-inch. And that was years later. And that was the intention. But then, like, there was, the time I did was a bit too long.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, what about 10-inch?
Yeah.
Because 10-inches are even more of a nerdy record thing, you know?
Sure, yeah.
It's just because they're just a neat size.
Yeah. And I don't have the original, the first one, but this did finally come in the mail. And I listened to it today, and awesome.
Oh, thank you.
I was there. But
it was awesome
anyway. Like, it's still awesome.
The Should Now Ditch bit did get cut.
Right. That's too bad. There's and speaking of creative swearing, again, we're talking about emo. But this is filled with it, but again, like, I don't, you know, I can be turned off by swearing. You know?
Yeah.
And there is an art to it.
You know what? I used to be so against swearing when I was growing up.
Uh-huh.
If my brother ever swore, I would punch him. You know, like, I was so against it.
Yeah.
I remember once I'm in anger, I swore, and I felt really guilty, and I went to my mom, hey, I've been swearing.
Uh-huh.
She's like, you know, just don't do it to make anyone feel bad. Don't do it, like, if there's a teacher or a cop around, and you'll be fine.
That's the best advice.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I feel like, I mean, my second word ever was shit, so I feel like I was...
No way!
Apparently, yeah, I was told that a couple years ago. My first was kitty, my second was shit.
Wow.
So I was meant
to... Yeah, you got so much of that now.
Exactly. Yeah, so true. Three fucking cats.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, so I feel like I was meant to swear and appreciate it.
But you find it to be a crutch.
It can be a crutch.
It can be.
Really bad comedians, or for even good comedians who don't know what they're doing yet.
Yeah. It's tough, though, because I swear so much in everyday life that when I'm just telling a story, I sometimes, you know, saying, the fucking guy, you know, you just stand up, and it's not, it has, you know, you usually want to save it for a punch.
Yeah, of course.
You know, Paul Tompkins is really good at saving, a swear word for just the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
The right moment, you know. Aziz is really good at that too.
Yeah.
He's always been really good at just finding the right place to swear.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could do that, but I ramble right, you know, right. And I just kind of, you know, comes out here and there. But I also like just gross stuff, too.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But, I mean, Louis C.K., though, is a guy who also swears in conversation, like, throughout, you know, it feels yeah. like, you know, but artful. It's artful. It takes yeah. a thing to not pull you out. I mean, she was turning the album down a little so we didn't piss off our neighbors, but to be fair, yeah. it's still great.
Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of a neat feeling. It's like, you know, when you're, like, listening to a Richard Pryor record and trying to turn it down, or George Carlin, yep. you won't want your parents to hear.
Yep. Did you, did your parents introduce you to any, I mean, I think you've already answered this, but did they introduce you to any comedy albums, or is it just like your dad introduced you to Blazing Saddles and movies and stuff like that?
Yeah, my dad was, you know, he likes comedy, but he's not, you know, he's not well-versed in it. You know?
Sure.
Yeah, he showed me Blazing Saddles and, you know, like, when Young Frankenstein, and I kind of just went off, and
yeah.
I was like, well, have you seen The Producers? He's like, no.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, shit.
Yeah, then my dad took me to go see Norm Macdonald
awesome.
Because I wanted to.
That's you know. Fucking great.
Yeah, and Penn and Teller and stuff.
God.
Yeah, it was weird. I think it was almost kind of like because no one else was in my family were that into it, mm-hmm. it gave me a thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like, oh, I you know, I had just tons of comedy posters. I had a frame picture of, you know, Steve Martin on my wall.
Yeah.
Just, I always, you know, I stayed in for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, of course.
You know, every, you know, I was always taping The Simpsons or Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
Comedy Central was always on the TV.
Did you ever experiment with trying to have a character, or did you just do your own thing?
When I started, it was 2002, and it was just like, I was trying to do one-liners.
Yeah.
Everyone was.
Sure.
You know, everyone, like, BJ Novak, who mm-hmm. you might know now as the guy from The Office.
Yeah.
We were all doing open mics all around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Dan Mintz, who's a great comedy writer, really great comedian. Morgan Murphy, who, you know, is a great comedian mm-hmm. And a really good writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, Jared Grody, awesome. You know, like, all these, there was a bunch of young people,
yeah.
And we were watching, you know, like, Zach was around,
uh-huh.
and it was just kind of, one-liners were really, like, what a lot, and not only one-liners, but a lot of short form.
Sure, sure, sure.
And that was just kind of what the scene was at the mm-hmm. time, you know, and it just, I wasn't as smart, like, all these kids went to college, you
yeah.
know, and then, you know, BJ and Dan went to Harvard, and
mm-hmm.
and Morgan was from LMU, and I didn't go to college, I never really considered myself a smart person,
uh-huh.
and like I just remember like comparing myself to these hilarious people, going, "I can't write jokes as like I have no smarts to make
okay.
something so neat like
okay.
how they do it." And then I like you know would be weird kind of,
uh-huh.
You know, to just kind of like. Build around the one-liners,
yeah.
But I felt like there was such a disconnect that I felt so dishonest. Where I was like, how can I just be hanging around off stage and then go on and go, all right, guy, you know,
right.
Like it felt so dishonest. And then, I started, you know, I started telling more story stuff or more stuff about myself,
yeah.
And then I started getting better reactions and
yeah.
from the crowds,
mm-hmm.
and so. I found out pretty fast that being myself is probably a better idea,
yeah.
Because I could I could play more with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I still am kind of a bit socially awkward,
mm-hmm.
or you know, so I can utilize just like that kind of bravado, you know.
Once I went to the library, I said, I'd like a book on the Heimlich anti-choking maneuver. The guy said, look at the card catalog, I'm busy. So I go to the card catalog, I look under Heimlich and choking and maneuver. It's not in any of those places. And I see this first aid book with the suction, and I take it, and the guy said, it's a reference book, you can't take it out, you have to Xerox. And I said, do you have a change for a dollar? He said, it's not a bank, it's a library. So I go to this souvenir stand, and I said, do you have change for a dollar? They said, it's not a bank, it's a souvenir stand. So I go to this bank, and they said, yes, this is a bank. And they give me the change, and I come back to that. This time, there's a line of students Xeroxing their books or whatever, and I finally Xerox the Heimlich. As I go back, the guy says, put it back now that you've used it. so I put it back, and as I leave, he says, thank you. I said, well, thank you. I'm never coming to this barn again. And I went back to my car. Now, by this time, my sister's almost purple from the chicken bone, you know.
It's clear it doesn't take a specific... To me, like, I mean, you're talking about the whole intelligence thing. I don't know how college-educated all of my favorite comedians have been, but there's clearly something else that it takes to be a good comedian, other than just sheer ability to observe, which, again, obviously you have. But what do you think it is? Because you must have learned at some point, obviously, me not having gone to college doesn't really mean so much. Like, I'm clearly good enough to do what I'm doing and compete. Well, it's not a competition for everybody, but you know what I mean? To hold up, you know, and to hold up to your own standards. Like, what the fuck is it?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Yeah.
You don't have an answer to that, really?
Well, you know, you could talk to any comic, and, you know, if they're honest, they'll say that they don't think they're as good as anybody else.
Sure.
Or, you know, maybe they will. There's guys that have a confidence in their abilities.
Sure.
But, you know, I've never been that good at, like, I wear my heart on my sleeve, kind of. Mm-hmm. And, I don't think, if someone says to me, hey, you're funny, mm-hmm. I'll name you fucking 20 guys right now that I hang out with every night that are way funnier than me. I'll show you this guy that's been doing it 2 years that's funnier than me.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I try my best to, not, you know, tell people that I'm not funny.
Right.
But it's, you know, I don't know. I think it's just, that was a weird thing. When I started doing comedy, I thought everyone was going to be like me. I thought it was going to be a bunch of kind of misfit kids that, you know, I can go in, I can start talking about, it's like, oh, you guys get Wilco and Pavement, you know, want to talk about Screeching Weasel. Like, you know, I thought it was going to be similar people to me.
Yeah.
Like, well, they're here at this place too. So, and that was my first, you know, I was like, oh, these are just kids that played sports and went to college and were just really funny. And then that was the big thing. I was like, oh, okay. I think you don't have to be any certain way to be funny. And everyone can just, you know, find their own way around it. It was weird. It was really weird. But so I did always have a complex because they all went to college.
Right.
And good colleges.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of times in conversations hanging out after shows, like, oh, where'd you go to college? I don't. You know, I was college age when I started.
You know,
I was 20.
Yeah.
So
fuck though. I mean, I guess it's a cliche, but that's an education on its own to start that fucking early. I mean, I know people start earlier than that, but I don't do stand up or anything. But I mean, that would fucking intimidate the shit out of me.
Well, it's, you know, I moved out to LA when I was 19 with the intention of doing comedy, and I didn't for an entire year.
Yeah.
And then so for me personally, I'm like, you know what, I lost a year.
Yeah.
I lost a year of doing comedy.
Right.
And I even, after I graduated high school in Hawaii, I waited a year before moving to L.A. And then in my head now, I'm just like, oh, that was 2 years. I could have been in it 2 years before.
Yeah.
You know, but then you talk to these other guys that started when they were 28.
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah. And fuck them. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But, like, because, I mean, I went to, you know, okay, college. I guess I'm supposed to promote it, but the, you know, fuck it, I'm still paying off my student loans. So
college. You went to Oklahoma College.
Yeah, exactly. I get like really fucking jealous when I hear about people who went to Harvard, and you know, and to see that there's a, it feels like a cop out to say, well, clearly they got that job because you know they're in the club.
Yeah,
it is a cop out, I guess, but I still get intimidated when I hear about it, and it's one of those things that sort of shuts me down too. I mean, I don't know. Still,
yeah, but there, as much as that's a thing. And how could you blame them? Because it's a, you know, especially for as far as like writers go, it's a, well, this guy went to Harvard. Well, he clearly knows how to finish his work.
Right.
And he's funny enough to be have put in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
So let's fucking do it, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And that was the thing where I was like, you know, I never went to college. I never had to, I was not good at finishing things. Mm-hmm. You know, I always have, you know, 3 different projects I'm trying to finish writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, give you a deadline. I was like, I haven't had a deadline since high school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we've gotten so far off topic.
I know. That's what always happens. How much do you, I feel bad because I half the time don't get to research the people we're talking about.
I usually know the people who are coming on the podcast, but...
You don't know me whatsoever.
I have no idea. I don't...
My name's Jonah.
Oh, Jonah.
Yes, yes.
You can ignore the thing on my wall that says Nerdist.
Where?
That, right there.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah, oh, you went to the taping. Yeah. That's why you look so familiar.
And the burrito show.
Yeah, that was yours. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I don't want to bring it up, but I did want you to say something nice about it, so thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. That was great. I love, like, because I love, like, pun stuff, you know?
Yeah. Oh, God, it's just stupid fucking pun, too. But, it was an amazing
the
show.
Ito was the stretch.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Aaron Burr was perfect.
But Chris called it out. He knew exactly what it was. Chris, yes, he's my best friend. That's why I call him his first name. Fuck, I did it.
Hey, he's the internet's best friend.
It's true. It's true. It is weird, because that's the thing about podcasts. You do kind of feel you know people.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about emo's history as a person. Have you read up on it? I mean, how much do you know about it, or you just know what you've heard?
You know what? I just know what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know he's from Downers Grove, Illinois. Yep. Hence the song, you know.
I was near there recently.
Yeah. I don't. And I think that's part of... I think that's probably what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he didn't really do any... Because he has to be that character. So
for
the
sure.
more you know about him, the like, well, he's saying that, but I know for a fact that he is this kind of guy from here, and
yeah.
he does this.
Is he still doing just straight up comedy club gigs, or is
he does small theaters,
yeah?
like in the middle of the country,
okay.
where it's still the '80s, you know?
Yeah.
He had a joke last year at FYFS. Where it was I was on a date with a girl the other night, and she got angry at me when I didn't open up her door. But I was just too busy swimming to the surface.
Holy shit. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, God. To still be that good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His hair's back, he's dressing weird. It's all like, oh, yeah, it's so cool.
Wait, how old would he be now, then?
He's got to be in his 50s.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Early 50s.
Yeah.
But... And I was actually thinking, looking at the cover of this album, wondering if anybody bought it without looking at the name and thinking it might be Paul Rubens, because I realized how much they look alike.
Yeah.
Not the hair.
Oh, yeah. No, very much so. They do have that same kind of boyish, like, their cheeks. It's the cheeks, really, that do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Also, did you see, this is one of my favorite little things in it. Written and performed by Emo Phillips from an idea suggested by Demon Dogs.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. You also don't get an experience like this if you're not buying an album anymore. I mean, there's a nice piece of illustration on the other side of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Too, you know?
Well, there's, you know, the New Traditionalist, that Devo album, it's
mm-hmm.
a great album. But, you know, you buy the record and it is a huge poster.
Yeah.
A New Traditionalist poster, and it's great.
That's awesome.
You know?
Who did the art for your cover while we're on it?
Oh, man. It's Dave Clock.
Uh-huh.
Who is just this amazing illustrator. You know, he was just a regular coming to the Meltdown shows on Wednesday. And, like, you know, I saw some of his stuff. I was like, hey, would you want to do, like, a poster every week?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. So he, you know, designs them and screen prints them every week and sells them. And he's just this, you know, he's done stuff for bands. And that's kind of what we had a lot in common. We, like, liked a lot of those same bands.
Okay.
And became, like, really good. I was just hanging out with him last night. He's just this amazing artist. And he did something similar. He did, like, an elephant made out of planks, you know, boards all nailed together. I was like, could you ever do someone's face? And he's like, yeah, we could probably do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made it for the cover. And I was like, oh, awesome. And then even more, I was like, you know what? Since there's so much wideness, like, what if we, like, did, like, a Raymond Pettibone style brush script where, you know, like those old those old Black Flag records
mm-hmm.
or SST or, you know, Circle Jerks records, like, oh, I know the exact brush he used.
Oh,
yeah,
holy shit.
And so, yeah, it was just like a fun process. And then even, you know, Ryan McManaman he's one of the guys that runs AST Records.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, he's an old punk kid too.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're like, oh, there's so much white, we'll just do a real basic, we'll put it on white vinyl.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's one of my favorite parts of the record is the artwork.
I'm quite handy with the ladies. I'm a great lover, I bet. Although I've broken up with my girlfriend, I'd like to get back with her. I mean, you find that one special person that you love and you trust and whose microbes you've developed a resistance to. Well, it happened a few months ago. I said to her one day, I said, "Babe." We had nicknames. She says, "Yes, Paul Bunyan." I said, "When we first met, how much love did you have for me?" She said, "Zero." I said, "And how much now?" And you know what she said? "A billion times that."
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you about next, is like, obviously comedy needs to stand alone, on, you know, it has to be its own thing, but I mean, it doesn't, it kind of lends something to have like a really good cover or a really good insert if it's a CD.
Yeah. I think so. And I think, I don't like funny album covers.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Like the 7-inch, the first 7-inch I had.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be a bit more graphic, but we kind of ran out of time, but it was, you know, it was me with my finger guns up to my head.
Uh-huh.
And like literally they were doing something. They were blowing my brains out.
Mm-hmm.
But what more people conveyed it as was me going, "I'm going to blow your mind," which is not the case if you listen to that fucking record. But, you know, and I think it's happening more because it doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, some management people will get upset when you don't put your face on the record.
Yeah.
You know? Anthony Jeselnik just told me the cover for his next record, and I don't want to give it away, but it's hilariously, perfectly awesome.
Yeah.
And he's not on it.
Awesome.
And then you know, there's like you know, there's different ways. I mean, both like Kyle Kinane's "Death of the Party" is mm-hmm. just a very iconic, very classy, very cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looks like it could be a cover of an Eels record.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the beard.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Reggie Watts, who's live at Central Park, just came out the same day as my record.
Oh,
that's a gorgeous album cover.
Really?
Yeah, and it's but the thing is. On top, on the other side, you know, funny album covers work for certain kinds of comedians.
Sure.
Where, you know, Pete Holmes's, album covers just is so very Pete Holmes.
Uh-huh.
It's like kind of got an old style look to it, mm-hmm. but, he's just, it's just funny. It's just very Pete Holmes, uh-huh. you know. And who's a guy I always say is made out of comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of the funniest guys on
insane.
And off.
Yeah. Insane. I'm just hoping your next album cover is you scrunching your shoulders and putting your palms to the sky.
Just really with a pushed up blazer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
just, that's another way to go. Like yeah. just like try and do a straight up old you know comedy parody. the next record will also be the name of the album will also be a reference to Mystery Science Theater the movie, which the past two have been as well.
Oh yeah, right. Fuck, I wanted to talk to you about Mystery Science Theater really quick, too, because I did. That was something I maybe not made friends over, but definitely became closer to my friends because of. I mean, did you have a lot of people you got to watch that with?
I watched it with my friend Donald, the guy I was talking about. He was, and we used to try and do it ourselves, you know. We used mm-hmm. to, we would, you know, turn down movies and just try and do it ourselves.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Know. And I remember I was visiting an aunt and uncle in Carson City, and realized that in Reno, the Mystery Science Theater movie was playing in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it was no way going to get to Hawaii.
Yeah.
So, you know, I made my uncle drive me to Reno just to watch the Mystery Science Theater movie.
Shit.
Yeah. But, you know, Donald and I, you know, we'd, like, we'd watch Mystery Science Theater and, you know, Kids in the Hall
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. Like, you know, I remember, like, his mom taking us to the theater for the Kids in the Hall movie.
Yeah. I remember that being one of the things that as a kid taught me to sort of learn to improvise. I think, you know, like watching that a lot, it's like, oh fuck, they're so fast. I want to be that fast. And that I know that finding out later that they wrote it, you know, doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. But you know, and like, you know, there's no way that could. It's one of those weird things. It's like I'll never get to be on that show.
Right.
I'll never get to be a part of Mr. Science Theater.
Right.
It is so much a part of my life in my head, and you know. So much of the things I say are based off of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mm-hmm. such it's one of the bigger influences in my life as far as comedy. And it's and I get really excited because I can kind of get close to it
mm-hmm.
because of the Doug Benson movie interruption.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I've done a few of them. I did just the other last week Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We did Over the Top.
Oh fuck!
And we did up in San Francisco. We did Roadhouse.
Really?
And, You know, I, and also like, you know, the Kumail Nanjiani and Matt Myra show at Meltdown, mm-hmm. Star Trek, where you just sit down and you make fun of Star Trek episodes.
It's got to be easy, but still.
Yeah, it's very easy. Yeah. It's a horrible show.
Yeah.
But because, you know, just being just bred on Mystery Science Theater,
yeah.
and I can never be a part of it, but I get to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at these shows, and I think I'm okay at it, and because of only because of Mystery Science Theater.
Sure. Do you have you ever had a thing, and maybe not with Emo Phillips specifically, but I've talked to other people on the podcast about, did you as a kid just straight up steal anybody's stuff that you just kept repeating and repeating, so you kind of learned your what you liked and what was funny?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's stealing, because that's just once you put something out, you know, it's part of it's part of the vernacular.
Yeah.
You know, just the way, you know, like, you know, people will say lines from songs, or, you know, just it just mm-hmm. becomes part of stuff. But yeah, there was a, I don't know any specifics, but like a lot of Mystery Science Theater lines, I like,
sure.
like very much permeate. Like mm-hmm. sometimes I'll like my, what I'll say back to people are just lines from mm-hmm. Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can completely relate. Yeah. Is there, I mean, did you ever, because, I mean, there are stories about comedians who, like, what's her name? Rosie O'Donnell's first breakout was stealing Jerry Seinfeld's bit and winning a contest with it.
Yeah.
She stole a whole set.
Yeah.
You know, I guess my question is not, have you stolen anybody's entire set? But I guess my question is there anybody who's, like, heavily influenced you to the point where you were just like, fuck, how do I do comedy now without stealing?
I was listening. I probably listened to Paul Tompkins in Personal more mm-hmm. than any other record in the recent years. And sometimes when I'm just riffing on stage, mm-hmm. I'll I'll slip into just like, "Oh, you better believe," you know, just kind of like we're like, "Oh, folks," and that's scary to me.
Yeah,
you know, because I know who he is. He knows who I am.
Yeah.
It would be awkward for everybody.
Sure,
you know. And I was once talking to Bob Odenkirk, name drop, but it correlates. He was talking about when he was doing stand up, mm-hmm. and he was like, "Oh, I was just like, I didn't realize it for a few years, but I was just doing Kevin Nealon."
Oh shit!
Yeah, and you know who called me on it was Kevin Nealon.
Mm-hmm.
He was just doing. That's what his style was.
Wow.
And he's like, but it wasn't. You know, everyone was doing Kevin Nealon, because everyone thought, you know, Kevin Nealon was the guy
sure.
that everyone wanted to be like in yeah. stand-up, you know? And, Norm Macdonald sometimes, I'll, like mm-hmm. edge into that territory, in my head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Real quick, what I like to usually wrap this up with is, if you're going to tell some, I hope people listening to this have never heard this album, some of them. I hope people are listening to this trying to discover comedy.
I hope they've heard it many times.
For sure. But my point is, if we're talking about it, we want to convince them to listen to it. What would you say to tell somebody who's never heard Emo Phillips before?
You know, I think it's one of those things, though, it's like, you shouldn't tell them too much, because it gives it away. It's so nice to be surprised by it.
Sure.
And just the, like, the slow burn of that first, like, you know, mm-hmm. probably the hardest time in one's life is when you have to kill a loved one because they're the devil. And then other than that, though, it's been a good day. Like, you know, it's just, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
And that sets the tone for the rest.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a, like, I'm going to say something, but then I'll take it back. Because it's something else, you know?
Yeah.
And you're laughing at each... There's no setups. Because the setups themselves are just weird jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but then there's a really brilliant punchline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because it's hard, because we usually, you know, the first few albums we did were like your standards.
Yeah.
A lot of Bill Cosby, mm-hmm. a lot of Richard Pryor. So, yeah, I just want to make sure that people know that you should listen to weird shit, too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we all know that Bill Cosby himself is a perfect album.
Yeah.
We all know, Was It Something I Said?
Yeah.
From Richard Pryor is an amazing album.
Yes.
You know? You can get Killing Them Softly. You can get mm-hmm. Bring the Pain. You know, mm-hmm. just, these are all black comedians, I'm realizing. but, yeah, these are all great records, and we all know that, but there's other good stuff to be, you know. Like you know, not so many people, younger people, like listen to any of the Jonathan Winters stuff.
Right, I know. Yeah, and that's, we haven't done an episode on him yet, but we absolutely have to.
Yeah.
It's a necessity.
Yeah, and even, you know, everyone knows Don Rickles, but, like, sure. You forget how perfect he is until you re-listen to Hello Dummy.
Right.
Yeah.
Because now you're just sort of, look at that guy with his hat.
Yeah.
It's hard now.
Yeah.
Recycle. But yeah. Still brilliant. Sure.
But I'm pretty religious. I was at church the other Sunday, and there was this very, let's say, hefty woman. I said, could you scoot over, please? She said, I was here first. I said, well, I figured they must have built around you, but... any Catholics here? I'm not Catholic, but I go to confession all the time. I say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. And I'm just in here to develop film. He hates that. I was very religious as a kid. I used to pray every night for a new bicycle. Then I realized the Lord in his wisdom doesn't work that way. So I just stole one and asked him to forgive me.
You know what, here's one other thing I actually would like to bring up, and it is before we totally wrap this up. There's this thing, and I've heard people say that maybe across the pond in England it's very different, where if you're an artist, you know, specifically, you know, a comedian or an actor, they don't mind appreciating you for your best work over a whole career. Here in America, we seem to appreciate them for the last thing they did. So if the last thing they did that sucked, we just sort of disregard them.
Yeah. Yeah, especially for music.
Why the fuck does that happen, do you think?
It's just the me thing, you know? It's like, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but you feel that sometimes, you know?
For sure.
It's like, oh, I can't wait for the next thing. Oh, the next thing sucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, I don't like Weezer, but I love the Blue Album Pinkerton.
Yeah.
You know, It's hard to be in there for the long haul because everyone's got so much going on. There's so much stimulation here that, you know, you want to compartmentalize and you want a clean house.
Sure.
So if someone starts sucking,
yeah.
You know, it is upsetting that in America no one really appreciates people for the long haul until they're dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, that's when they go, oh, I've always... You know,
like
Whitney Houston didn't do shit for a while, for a long time.
It's true. It is true.
You know, Donna Summer was recording an album when she died.
Really?
Would anyone get it? Would anyone care?
I don't know.
No.
You're pretty sure? No.
Here's something. Passion Pit just put out a new single, Van Passion Pit.
Okay.
They were like, they popped off real hard when they first came out. And they haven't put out anything since.
Mm-hmm.
Put out a single. And everyone's going, it's their comeback. It's their sophomore release.
Yeah.
What do you mean their comeback? Give them some time.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's a, I was hearing a, Stephen Wright talk once, and he was talking about, oh, everyone's always going, like, oh, where have you been?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen you on TV. So, yeah, well, that's not TV, you know? performing every night of my life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, why, if you're not in front of somebody, they don't care.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's sad to me.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, I feel like if I'd only heard George Carlin in the 90s, I wouldn't give a flying fuck about George Carlin as a comedian because I didn't like the angry stuff.
You know? Yeah.
I like the hippie stuff, personally. Like, I just, because the seven words is, to me, like, the perfect piece of comedy.
Yeah.
And then coming back, I get it that he was doing a character. It just wasn't a character that appealed to me. So I feel like if I was a little more American, I guess it would... I wouldn't love him anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
But if it was someone like Carlin, you can go, you know, the special wasn't very good, but we'll check out the next one.
Sure. That's true. Yeah.
And then, like, the last three I really liked. A lot of people didn't like the one before the last one, Life's Worth Losing.
Uh-huh.
I actually quite enjoyed it. Because everything was about suicide, and I love it.
You love it. You talk about that on your own?
Yeah, I love it. He has the whole bit about, it's like, when you, you know, like, it's like, I'm not talking about the hard decisions when you finally figure out that you're going to kill yourself. I'm talking about, it's like, well, how am I going to do it? Am I going to get a rope? Or am I going to get a rope? Home Depot's got a sale on ropes right now. I'm going to drive there. Ah, it's traffic. It's just like,
yeah.
The minor irritations of a guy about to kill himself.
Yeah.
You know,
it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Before we go, what would you like to plug? What things are happening?
I guess just if you enjoyed me talking here, if you could you could buy my record, Hello Mr. Magic Playing Person, Hello, listener. That would be nice. It's available on, you can get it on vinyl. We're running out soon because there was only a 500 print. But you can go to theastrecords.com for that, or if you want to just digitally download it. Which it also, that's the thing I gotta let people know.
Yeah.
It does come with a digital download if you get on vinyl. And it's a gorgeous artwork.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's also available on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Zune, Marketplace, for all your digital needs. But I'm almost proud of it.
Almost
as much as I can be of anything I do. And you gotta understand, I hate everything I do so much.
No, I understand.
I always have these laps of self-awareness where I end up releasing something into the world and then immediately regret it for the rest of my life. But I like this. I think it's fun. The alienation thing that happened, I'm so glad we got to keep that in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's great.
Yeah. I like it. It's a, you know, if you like me on the Nerdist podcast, I think it's a neat part of that.
Yeah, you won't be disgusted or surprised if you've heard the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely true. It has one of my favorite suicide jokes ever on period. So
thanks.
It's fucking brilliant.
You know, it sucks. I just fucking added another part to that joke.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, that means go see him live.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All those are half jokes. Come see the rest.
Wait, what is it? Nerdist.com/calendar? Is that where we see you guys live?
That's where you can see the Nerdist live, yeah. What's going up?
Wednesday.
Okay, well, this Friday we'll be in Phoenix.
Okay.
Then we're doing the Nokia Theater the weekend after that, and then we're going to be in Dallas and stuff. And, yeah, every Wednesday at the Meltdown, me and Kumail Nanjiani hosting amazing stand-up shows. Every Wednesday night at Meltdown Comics, the Nerd Melt Theater.
At Jonah Ray on Twitter.
All right. JonahRay.tumblr.com. MySpace.com/JonahRay.
And then I will just quickly say, please come to our live episode on Monday, May 28th at 7:30. It's a really convenient time and place. But it is at iOS. So please come.
Great parking in that area.
It's fucking $5 a ticket. Buy a goddamn ticket.
And there's a bar there.
There are drink specials. And I'll pretend I'm responsible for those. We're going to have David Anthony Higgins. My buddy Jeremy Guskin's going to be there. Me, my regular co-host Mike, who's not here today, will be there. And also come to a drinking game, Clue, which is the Saturday before that, May 26th. I'm playing Mr. Green. So come to that. So that'll be fun.
Awesome.
Jonah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been awesome.
Yeah, that was a good time.
All right, everybody. Thank you, and have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is recorded at Fort Awesome Studios in beautiful downtown Burbank, California. Our producer is Mike Warden, our host is Jason Klom, and he's also the editor. Comedy on Vinyl is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. You can check out all of our other podcasts, books, videos, other audio stuff, probably some writing, at stolendress.com. And please check out Comedy on Vinyl at facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, twitter.com/comedyonvinyl, and please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us highly, and spread the word. Thank you so much for listening to Comedy on Vinyl this week, and have a very good thing.
The guy said, how about a cockatoo? I said, no thanks, just the bird. I went into the clothing store and I made up my mind. I wasn't going to let any pushy salesman pressure me into buying something I didn't need. So after I bought the kilts, I went to the hardware shop. I said, this riding lawnmower is stupid. They said, next time you get on top. I went into the gas station, said, fill her up, Harry. The guy said, regular? I said, no, put on a gorilla suit and dance like a fairy. Oh, I went into Gus's artificial organ and taco stand. Said, give me a bladder, por favor. The guy said, is that to go? I said, well, what else would I want it for? Oh. Down the street, something caught my eye and dragged it 15 feet. That's why I like to shop in downtown Downers Grove.